You filed a flight plan to Mountain Rescue. If we don't report in, they'll come looking for us.
Now, that's how it's supposed to work, except I put in a flight plan for Borum Caverns, and this isn't Borum Caverns, is it, Juno?
We're in the wrong cave.
Where are we?
It hasn't got a name. It's a new system. No one's ever been down here before.
Let me ask you a question. Would you prefer to stay alive without your mommy and daddy or die with them? That's a tough question, huh?
It was moving, it was alive, it knows we're here, we just have to go. We have to go.
Can't do that.
You didn't see it. I'm not staying here.
If we try to leave, they kill us.
We're being quarantined here. We are being kept here to die.
While you were looking for me, I was looking for you. Well, I got you now.
Was that him in the car?
Yeah, sure it was. Didn't walk very far.
Why is that?
Because I cut off his legs.
Yeah, I'm gonna do the same to you.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. How art thou?
I'm doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
I'm all right.
And we have a special guest from the state of Missouri.
Hi, this is Kevin.
Kevin, how are you?
Glad to be here.
Excellent. And people probably know Kevin from sometimes guest hosting on this podcast, but he's also a main podcaster on some of our television series podcasts, as well as Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. He's joined us. Right now he is on the Fallout TV podcast that we do called Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola podcast. And then he was also on the one we just wrapped up before that, which was Bo Hancock and the One Piece podcast, based off the Netflix television series One Piece. But you weren't on the Halo one, were you?
Thankfully, no.
Yeah, so you lucked out there. I mean, the podcast was good, but the show was...
Yeah, I mean, I've been on a few others.
Yeah, the like She-Hulk one.
The She-Hulk and... Discovery of Witches. We did a couple episodes on Stephen King novels and Lovecraft novels, and... I'm just your guest star that just – guest star. Good grief. Did I just say that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you did.
Your guest host. I am your guest host.
La-di-da, Mr. Guest Star.
And Kevin's
Freudian slip there.
And Kevin's a staple when we do our yearly meetups for the Dark Discussions podcast down in Mystic, Connecticut. This year, I believe – Eric, you said, well, I don't think...
We can talk about it later. Yeah, I'm not going to make it this year.
Yeah, so...
And I can't either.
Yeah, so we may be skipping it this year due to various things that would make it unable for some of us to make it, specifically Barrett and Eric. It's all good. We can always restart it up again another year. Who are we? We are the Dark Discussions Podcast, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. Basically, what we do here is talk about films. So, horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, drive-in theater, cult movies, foreign language films, and the like. Basically, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us whatever you want. Just put in DDP in the subject, and then whatever subject you want, because the DDP will allow us to search the inbox for your email, and then we will read your email on the podcast. So, yes, please do email us. It's always great to see people participate in our show. We do have a Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join in the discussion and talk about anything and everything related to genre. Today is May 2nd, 2024, that we're recording this, because some of our listeners, like Pam, are always curious when we record our episodes, because sometimes they don't come out immediately, though this one may actually be the next episode of the podcast, as some of the other ones, I have to do a quick editing to get them listenable, in my opinion. Well, if we're lucky, this one, I won't need any editing at all. Eric, what else can people find on www.darkdiscussions.com?
Well, you can find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to financially contribute to online artists like us. Producing the show is not free. We have to pay for things like computer equipment and movie tickets and website hosting and domain names and so on and so forth. So if you would like to help us offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or click on the Patreon badge on any page of darkdiscussions.com. We appreciate all contributions. And when you do contribute, for every $5 a month that you do contribute, you will have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We draw one at random on a quarterly basis, and we'll be doing that tonight.
Indeed, indeed. And sure enough, we will do that tonight. So Mike has the randomizer, computer randomizer number generator, and he's going to press that button and let us know what number pops up, and we will see what we're going to do. So, Mike, what do we got? Mike?
We have between 1 and 466. Number...
All right, 381. All right, let's find out. Okay, this is from Gage Fultz, one of our listeners.
Gage!
He's outside of New London, Connecticut right now. That's where he lives. And he's actually he wouldn't be able to join us this year either because he is actually going out in the submarine because he's in the U.S. Navy. And so, yeah, so he's going to be out for like 10 months, I think it is, or something like that.
God bless you, Cage. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
He did it. I know why.
Actually, the main thing is he's going to miss his family because he has a beautiful family. So they'll miss him.
Yeah, he has
too.
A lovely wife and three children, including a pair of twins. And so he calls the shipping out peace and quiet. That's
yes. But either way, this movie, I think we've all may have seen it at one point, and I actually like it a lot. I know Mike, you may have had mixed
What's
feelings
the movie?
About it. The movie is called Hell House LLC.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a good one. Found footage film. So yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that one pretty quick. I like that one. That's a really good
one. For the end of the year, I watched the right. Didn't I? Was the latest version? Didn't they have like the?
They had a new one. Yeah, how was that?
Yep.
I thought it was decent. It's it certainly got moments.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, the second one had was decent, but it had one moment that was really awesome. So, but yeah, it's a pretty good series of films. So, yeah, so Hell House LLC. I'll let Gage know. All right, and maybe we'll coordinate this, to do it sooner or later if there is some dry moments at the theaters and at the VOD and Shutter levels and all that stuff. Another film I thought about, I forgot to mention, it was Civil War. I know everybody was just lukewarm with it, but I'm still willing to do an episode on that if we do it. But we'll talk about it. But we already have a decision for next week, so we're all set what we're going to do. So once again, thanks to all our Patreon supporters, Gage included. because so
just as a recommendation, I know we all have scheduling stuff, but I would highly recommend going to see Civil War in the theater.
Oh, all right, fair enough. Yeah,
the sound design is amazing.
It is. It's on my list for this weekend.
Have you seen it yet, Mike?
No, that's why I have it on my list
for this weekend.
No, but I know Mike sometimes sees movies twice, like he did that.
True. That's true.
The King Kong film recently. So yeah,
which I still haven't gotten to see a second time yet.
No, how about that? Because I swore you were going to do it, and you just haven't.
I was going to, and then life
gets in the way.
Life is
stupid.
This week.
Life sucks.
Yeah, sometimes I wish I was never born. Experience pain and suffering and depression and disappointment.
Yeah, my parents.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah, indeed. Again, that was, I'm not suggesting anything. All I'm saying is it was a joke. I just will put it that way. Anyway, all right.
Hotline, Phil. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I think that's pretty much our house cleaning tonight and our Patreon pick for tonight. And with that, I think we can get into our episode tonight. And with that, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we are discussing a new movie that might still be hanging out at a few theaters. It is also available for digital rental, and it is on the Shudder streaming service tonight. We're going to be talking about Late Night with the Devil.
We are back in 5, 4. Now, here's Mr. Midnight, Jack Delos!
Oh, good evening, Night Owls, and thank you for allowing me into your living rooms once again. Well, Night Owls, we've got a heck of a show in store for you tonight, and I'm very excited for you to see it all unfold before your very eyes. I really hope you love it. Gosh, I hope you love it. Please love it.
I'm trying to host a cashless syndicated talk show.
And I'm trying to help you keep it on the air.
We all know how important it is to keep our sponsors and affiliates happy, but in my humble opinion, there is only one person who really matters in this whole darn crazy business. And that is you, our viewer.
You're meddling with things you don't understand.
Whoa! Now, as you know, here on Night Owls, we think it's very important to keep an open mind. Please welcome Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, the young subject of the book, Conversations with the Devil.
I really don't think it's a good idea, Jack. It's becoming more unpredictable.
That's a good thing. That's why we still do flat TV. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live television first as we attempt to commune with the devil.
Lily, can you hear me?
Good to see you again, Jack.
Lily, return to me.
This isn't about ratings anymore.
No one's going anywhere.
How could you let it happen, Jack? How could you let it happen?
Please be warned, anyone with young children in the room. You're about to see.
You okay, Jack?
It's profoundly disturbing and shocking.
Get out there east of midnight. But you knock him dead.
That's right. Late Night with the Devil is an Australian film that pretends it's in the United States. Everybody has excellent American accents because everybody except basically the lead is Australian. It's directed by Colin Cairns and Cameron Cairns, so they must have some relations, I would think. And they also wrote the film. The film stars David Dastmalchian, who's a well-known character actor in the United States. And then the film includes other actors as well, including and actresses as well, including Laura Gordon, Ian Bliss, Fazel Bazzi, and Ingrid Torelli, Rise Arteri, Georgina Haig, and Josh Kwong Tak. A surprise guest that plays the narrator is Michael Ironsides, who's Canadian. The film has received fairly good reviews by critics. 97% great reviews or good reviews for 196 total reviews. And course, I didn't bring it up on Rotten Tomatoes because I'd be curious to see what our you know, regular audience would look think of it. And
they're enjoying it too.
They are enjoying it too. 81%. I was purposely speaking slow so I could get to it. About one of my little tricks there. So there we go. So. Indeed. All right. So that's what we got. Good reviews all around. A little more by critics, but all in all, it seems like most people who've seen it have enjoyed it. So let's go around and discuss our thoughts and how we heard about the film. I guess I'll start. I don't usually start. So I actually heard about this film because you guys were talking about, I'm going to go see it this weekend at the theaters, like 4 weeks ago or whenever it was. And I was like, what's that? I didn't even hear about the film. I didn't know nothing about the film. No idea that it even existed. Because, as Mike said, life sometimes gets in the way. And I was not going to be able to get to the theaters to see it unless we locked it in most certainly as an episode. And we had already had like three films that we had planned in advance, I think, by then. And I just wasn't able to see more than one film per week. So I actually watched it the other day, oddly the same day that Kevin Letts was texting me about it. And I unfortunately have to watch it on a computer because my Shudder app does not work no matter where.
Still?
Yeah, it doesn't work on either.
I thought you got
Apple.
That straightened out.
No, it doesn't work on my Apple TVs. Yeah, it really does. The Shudder's a really bad company, in my opinion. Even on their website.
Well, AMC did lay off a butt ton of people, so that's probably part of it.
Yeah.
And I've never had a problem with the Shudder app, so.
Me neither.
Yeah, that's maybe good it's for never. Well, I even when I log onto my computer and just watch it through either Chrome or Edge, because I don't have an Apple, so I didn't have the Safari, but I have Chrome and Edge. And every so often it bombs there and I get the wheel of death.
Weird.
It's like, yeah.
I will say that app makes me log in more than the others, but I've never had it full out stop working.
Yeah, it's weird because it used to be fine for me, and then one day it just collapsed. And
another thing to do is then you can always subscribe to it through other services instead of doing the Shudder app.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. I wonder if Apple – does Apple Plus –
Amazon.
Yeah, Apple – that's how I subscribe to it, is through Apple.
Yeah. I do too, but oh, yeah. So maybe I should use – does Apple Plus have the app – inside the Apple Plus, I wonder? Because I know they do with MTN.
The way Apple works is weird. It still uses the app.
Oh, right. That's too bad.
It will show it to you in the Apple Plus app, and then it will launch the Shudder app.
Oh, the bastards. Yeah, so. I'll
Eric, do you have problems with it?
I don't.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that those problems magically go away.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just saying that it seems like it's something other than the app. If that's
it probably
like something else, another variable involved that
I'm not going to theorize.
Yeah, I can't debug it. That's the problem. I got to try some more things. Maybe I'll try some stuff this weekend because my family's going to Providence, Rhode Island for a Girl Scout.
Have you tried uninstalling and reinstalling it?
I have.
I thought so.
That's the first thing you do, you know?
Yeah, that's you asked him that last time, and that's what he said. He had already done it.
Turn it off and turn it back on again.
Yeah. So every time we
suggest, like a true IT guy.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. I would say.
Every time I try watch Shudder, or we suggest a Shudder film, I'm like shuddering in real life because it's like, oh, I gotta watch it on my damn computer.
Anywho.
Yeah.
Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, so Late Night with the Devil. So I watched it, it's a really good film. It's really good. It kept my attention completely. There was no moments where I drifted off or wanted to check email or check the baseball scores or anything like that. So all in all, the film kept my attention. Some minor flaws. Last act is a little weak compared to the rest of the film, but that doesn't mean it's bad. It's just not as good as the rest of the film. And the hyperbole that people were saying that it and reviews say that it felt just like a real 1970s, you know, Tonight Show or something like that. I don't know if that is legit, but or I don't feel it is. But again, that is not a saying. That was just hyperbole by some of the reviewers. But all in all, yeah, it's a really good film. I recommend. I could see this landing on my top 10 horror films for the year for sure. Of course, it's still early. We just entered May. It could fall, but it'll definitely be a top 20. I can't see it dropping out of the top 20, even if it could drop out of the top 10 as we have another 7 months of horror films to come. But all in all, a really good film. High recommend. And if you subscribe to Shudder and don't have the problems I have with the app or the website, it's well worth watching because it's free if you have a subscription. So, yeah, big thumbs up. Let's go with you, Eric.
Yeah, I forget exactly where I heard about this first, but the title caught my attention. And I'm also going to take a moment to pat myself on the back because if you recall in our 2023 review show, I called out David Dastmalchian as the breakout actor from 2023. Because he had supporting parts in 4 different movies I had seen, and here we are doing a review on a movie where he's the lead. So, go David, go. Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I actually agree with the people who are saying this nails the 70s TV aesthetic. I thought it was pretty authentic in that regard. There's some silly controversy about this movie we can get into later. It didn't affect my opinion of it at all. I thought it was well acted. Liked the atmosphere, liked what happened in the movie. Thought it was pretty cool with a nice little gut punch at the end. So, yeah, I enjoyed this movie, and it is also currently at the top of my list for the year.
And, Eric, you should buy some lottery tickets because you did call out David Dastmalchian is a breakout 2024 star, possibly, and you were right on. You were right on.
Indeed.
Yeah, I may choose him for 2024 because of this film, to be honest. But yes. All right, let's go with you, Kevin.
I saw this in a preview. I know how Eric feels about trailers, expletive trailers, but I was
more on that later.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember where I mean, the last movie I saw in the theaters was Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which I really liked, but we'll get to that one later if we do. And it might have been on that. It might have been, and this was only a couple weeks ago, but I remember seeing, they're saying, you know, coming from Shudder, and I thought, oh, hey, great, it's going to be on Shudder, and it was in the theaters, and it's like, oh. Well, and then they say, all right, now it's on Shudder. Yay. And I think I didn't wait long to see it. I didn't know if you guys did it yet or not. I thought you had, but, and I mentioned it to Phil and I said, hey, have you guys done this one yet? No. And so I was watching it and then I'm texting Phil saying, yeah, this is great. And, you know, there's a scene in the movie where this woman, utters a Latin. And I had no idea what she was saying, but I had a feeling it'd be kind of cool if I knew. So I looked it up and I kind of got a translation from it. But yeah, this is the ending was odd. The ending was one of those. You can kind of tell that the people making it was, all right, how are we going to end this thing now? But it was a good movie. I would really, really recommend it. And yeah, I would say it's probably, you know, top of 2024 so far, because most of the horror movies I've seen recently have just not really been doing anything for me, and this one has actually got some substance to it. And yes, it reminds me a lot like a 70s show, like a 70s tech talk show. The outfits, the hair, even like the hairstyles and the sideburns, it was all, it's all very good. I mean, even the little designs with the lines, kind of swervy lines, it was really good. So yes, I'm glad I saw it, and I'll probably see it again.
All right, sounds good. And I know you like religious horror films as well, like me and Eric. Definitely check out Immaculate when you can. I know it's rental right now for like $9.99, but it'll probably drop and maybe even be free on a VOD service at one time or sometime soon anyway. But just another recommend for you. All right, let's go with you, Barrett.
All right. I felt this was very authentic 70s feel of a night show, so I didn't agree with that on Phil. And I also feel like the filmmakers knew what they wanted for the end, so I don't agree with that either from Kevin. I saw this in a trailer. One of the many movies I've seen this year had it as a trailer, and you know, they're hard to avoid. I'm not as good as Eric about closing my eyes. But I have been trying to do that because I see them so many times now, it drives me insane. I like this movie a lot. I thought it was really, really good, really well done, definitely well acted. And Eric definitely gets a prize for predicting it. David Dalmatian was just amazing in this. I thought he did perfect. I thought all the acting was good. And it was just a really good movie. It kept me watching it the whole time. I was never bored. I did see this in the theater. I'm glad I saw it in the theater because I want to support that method of seeing movies. I would miss it if I couldn't. So I'm hopeful that we keep getting stuff like this in the theater.
All right, sounds good. And let's go you, Mike.
I heard about this film. I don't think I saw a trailer for it. Maybe I saw it once because I had heard about it on the festival circuit or South by Southwest or something where it had aired and it had some really good word of mouth. So I may have looked up information on it, but if I did, I don't remember. I don't remember seeing the trailer. Not that that really matters. And I did see it in theaters. I guess it was about a month ago. My wife was off at a poker tournament, so I had the weekend free. And I caught a late night showing, and I really enjoyed it. I think the audience also had a really good time with it, from what I can tell. I'm going to say I had a problem with the final act. Not that I don't think they knew what to do, but I think it broke the format.
I can see where you're going with that. Yeah.
And I was going to say, yeah. that's probably more of a me issue than anything else. It's not going to affect other people. Other people may have absolutely no problem with that. I think that David Dalmatian gives a fantastic performance. Admittedly, I didn't watch Carson in the 70s because I was in single digits in age in the 70s. But I did see him in the 80s through his retirement in the very early 90s, I believe. And then there were daytime talk shows, right? Like,
Phil Donahue.
Phil Donahue, there's others.
Oprah Winfrey.
Well, Oprah's way later.
Dinah
Shore is like, and I think he just does a really, really, really good performance, as does
Robert Downey Jr. Wasn't it Robert Downey Jr.? No, who was the guy that spoke?
That was Mitch Leahy's.
Just filling a rabbit hole.
Yeah, completely different kind of style. He gives a great performance. Channels Carson without trying to be Carson. The set design is great. You can quibble little things in terms of, like, if you really want to get us to be a stickler, how long are the commercial breaks and when are the commercial breaks spaced out? That probably won't quite work that the way they would for a network TV show. For the most part, I just watched it for the second time right before we got on. I was just sucked right back into it. And I really appreciated some of the subtleties and nuances of his performance, because he is a person giving a performance, playing a character in the film, right? Because he's playing the talk show host, and it's not supposed to be naturalistic. And I think he does a great job. And then, as I said, I forgot the actor's name, but the one who plays his sidekick, his Ed McMahon, I think also did a really good job.
Is his name.
So,
pronunciation, but
I think that was what they did. Like, there's anyone here who has a name that's easy to pronounce, but we're not hiring them. I kind of would like to see if Del Monte get a Oscar nomination just to have somebody have to read it out loud.
It's Reese Arteri. That's how you pronounce it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not going to argue. So.
Yeah, it's a Welsh first name and an Italian last name. So, yeah. Anyway, continue, Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so no, I liked it. I just, like I said, it's a minor gripe. They do something. And then there's some other things that I can gripe about, but it's also stuff that's not unusual in films, and I don't want to get into it without potentially spoiling the plot.
All right, sounds good. All right, so it seems like we all liked it quite a bit. So, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. A live television broadcast in 1977 goes horribly wrong, unleashing evil into the nation's living rooms.
All right. It's a strange IMDb wiki, whatever, but yeah, whatever. All right. So what we do here on the Dark Discussions podcast, basically what we do is we give our review of the film, which we just kind of did. So what do we do after that? Well, we talk about things. We talk about the film. We have two parts. We have a short part, which is the non-spoiler section, where we talk about general things that are related to the film, such as maybe found footage films or the TV shows that it's based on, that it's trying to pretend to be. You know, things like that we can get into. And then at a certain point, we throw up the spoiler alert, which is where we talk about everything and anything related to the film, including spoilers, twists, the ending, things that basically we try to dissect and critique specifics in the film. What were they trying to say? Was this film just for entertainment purpose? Was there a meaning behind it? We don't know. But that's what we're here to talk about. But before we do get into the spoilery section, we talk about general stuff. And I will bring something up because it seems like I may be in the minority on this, but were 1970s shows that cheesy? Because that's why I was thinking.
Yes.
That's the reason why I was confused and didn't think it was as real as people were saying it was.
Oh no, they were that cheesy. Oh,
I mean, I was also single digits in the 70s, but a lot of that aesthetic bled over into the early 80s.
Oh, yeah.
I have seen reruns of 70s stuff, and it all had, you know, particularly the fall tones, like the oranges and yellows with the curvy lines. That is total 70s aesthetic.
The first orange.
Kiss Halloween special.
Yeah, well, that's just it. It reminded me of that Shudder Halloween special that was set in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, way too many commercials, but it had the same same feeling for me with like the nostalgia. But this one obviously was much better done. But yeah, and the funny part is that my parents painted my bedroom with those lines. When I was growing up,
it was paint. It wasn't wallpaper.
No, they painted it all one color, and they took the colors of those types of the lines, and they just painted one line down and went right next to it and right next to it. And I mean, I grew up with that. So
interesting. All right, so maybe my confusion in saying that it was hyperbole was off a bit because I don't remember.
Yeah, the two shows I was thinking of were Michael Douglas, which is not Michael Mike, not that Michael Douglas.
Merv Douglas.
No, that's Merv Griffin is another one.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think, was it Dick Cavett? I think it was another one. I think he might have worked 60s.
Yeah.
So, but
there was another one, too, Scottish guy or something.
Right, right. And it was a lot of variety shows, too, like Donnie and Marie and...
Yeah.
Cher and Sonny and Cher and so on and so forth. But anyway, continue, Mike.
Yeah, so that... I think he captures that very, very well. And the whole aesthetic and the cheesiness. And let's also remember, this is the guy who's going against Carson. The 1960s, 70s, and 80s are littered with the corpses of people who went up against Johnny Carson. if you were a younger viewer, there was Johnny Carson, and that was it. Once you got to, now he's airing, on the Tonight Show. He's the second host of the Tonight Show after Jack Parr, I believe, was the second host. There was one before that, but it was the third. But he basically dominated late night TV from the 60s through the 70s through the 80s. And you had all sorts of people. You had, I remember Chevy Chase had a show, Joan Rivers had a show,
Paul
had a show.
He had one too.
One of the things I thought was clever about this movie is that, it's a fictional show on a fictional network. So clearly this is just like an alternate universe. So really any problems that you have with it, they can just toss off with that. Well, it's not the same universe.
Right. I found out the reason this is set in 1977 is because they needed it to be on a Monday night because it was sweeps week and it was Halloween. And the only time Halloween fell on a Monday night in the 70s was 1977.
Ah.
Oh, there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah. I doubt anybody, any of the real networks, unless the film was made by a real network, would have allowed them to use their real name. So the TV channel was USB. I think is what they called it.
Yeah, it was USB.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
UBC.
UBC, that's
UBC?
It.
Okay.
Yeah, probably, yeah, like something like United Broadcasting. Yeah, like United Broadcasting. I'm guessing like United Broadcasting Company based on NBC, CBS, ABC.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
His show was called Night Owls with Jack Del Roy. And I think it started in, was it 68 that it supposedly started?
71.
Okay. Yeah. So he was one of the competitors and he always kept on, showing as number two. And as the years go by, his number two behind Carson would be lesser and lesser. So in other words, if Carson was number one, for all television shows between, 7 to midnight. His originally would be like fifth or sixth, but by 1977, he was down to like 33 or something is what they're implying. So he's getting a little worried that he could be one of those dead bodies that Johnny Carson unintentionally
danced on.
Dance, exactly.
To be honest, if any one of those people I mentioned had survived 6 years against Carson, it would have been amazing. Most of them died on arrival.
Magic Johnson lasted for like 3 to 5 months, I think, and he was done.
Magic Johnson had a show?
You sure did, yeah.
I don't remember that.
Chevy Chase, I remember the Chevy Chase one.
I remember. I don't remember Magic Johnson.
Chevy Chase did not last long either.
No, well, he sucked.
Yeah, Magic Johnson sucked too, to be honest. Yeah, Magic Johnson talk show name. Yeah, let's see what it says. It was called The Magic Hour.
Well, of course it was.
1998. June to September.
Then I think, wasn't Arsenio Hall?
Hall was probably the most successful of them. Because he lasted for a few years.
Let's not forget David Letterman. Do not forget.
Yeah, but David
Letterman was on after Carson, though, wasn't he?
Oh, way too rough.
Right, he was the Carson after show, and his show was largely built around making fun of late night talk shows.
And then what happened was he wanted Carson's spot, but they gave it to Jay Leno instead. And so he quit and he moved to a different network. And he went head to head against Jay Leno is what it was.
Jay Leno. And then there was the whole thing with Conan O'Brien and that's when Conan O'Brien was picked for the Letterman spot.
Yeah.
And that's how he became famous, because before that he was basically just a Simpsons writer. And the response to that was who? And then you had a whole kerfuffle about when it was Leno's time to retire, but he didn't quite want to retire, and so they moved him up. There was an HBO movie about the late night wars between Leno and Letterman, and it was kind of interesting. There's a whole sordid story there of these guys who are on your TV smiling every night. But they all had daggers behind their back.
They were all my understanding is that Carson could be pretty vicious when it came to his career.
I always thought was funny was Johnny's sidekick. What's his name again, Mike?
McMahon.
Yeah. So McMahon, who's from Lowell, Massachusetts, where I was born. And Jay Leno, who is from Andover, Massachusetts, which is the next town over. And I thought they were going to be buddies. And when Leno took over, he wanted McMahon gone. And so they hated each other. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. And then
Didn't Joan Rivers vie for a part two on Johnny Carson?
She was one of the big co-hosts. Basically, Letterman, Leno, and Rivers were the ones that would substitute whenever.
Yeah, they would fill in for Carson when he wasn't around, so they were the front runners.
Yeah, so they were all front runners. And for whatever reason, they chose Leno. Probably, I have no idea, so I don't really want to say. And then Conan, it was interesting too, because he was from Boston, so he's only like 18 miles away from where McMahon and Leno grew up. And I don't think
why you think that has anything to do with anything.
Well, because people in Boston seem to like always be like, yeah, we're all Bostonians, but no, not at all. They hated each other. It was kind of interesting. I always thought that
Hollywood, it don't mean shit.
Yeah, exactly. I always thought it was
when it means the amount of sums we're talking about.
yeah, that's true. And it wasn't just the money; it was also the name of the show. Everybody wanted the Tonight Show because that was had the built-in audience as well. They're all narcissistic cluster B motherfuckers.
Hey, the only way you're going to be in front of that many people every day is if you're narcissistic. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's probably true.
No, but bring it back to the movie. That's part of what I enjoyed about David Smeltian's performance is that he was completely different when the cameras were rolling.
Yes.
I thought that was excellently done.
Yeah, that is true. What's the one Ellen DeGeneres, you know, she seemed like she was pretty cool on camera, and then off camera they said she was the devil. So,
right.
so there you go, right? Where else do we want to take this? So yeah, all right. So I'll take back my hyperbole and it not being as close to reality as I felt it was.
I mean, I have to admit, I like the mention of Carson, like right at the beginning. It's, I'd like to thank my parents who are probably watching Johnny Carson right now.
Yeah,
that was funny.
Yeah, a lot of self-deprecating humor. Like what's that guy from Long Island? Not Long Island, Staten Island, that used to be on Saturday Night Live. That was in that horror movie we saw with Kevin and everybody at Mystic a couple of years ago. Pete Davidson. Yeah, that's his name.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
That movie. Yeah. He was like one. He's like one of the best self-deprecating comedians I've ever seen.
He's a piece of shit, and I wish he'd go away.
but either way, I'll just say that he's one of the best self. Whatever, I already said it. I don't have to say it again. I'll move on, Eric. Sorry, I didn't need to bring it. he joins the punch in the face crowd.
His longest for stated opinions, there's mine.
fair enough. But either way, that's for younger folk who remember him and watch Saturday Night Live, which I did not, but I watched a couple of things of his on YouTube. That's the type of humor that Kevin is relating to with the Johnny Carson line about my parents are already probably watching Johnny Carson instead of me. Mm-hmm. It portrays it well. Then there you go. I'm wrong. I take it back.
It's all good.
Anything else that we want to talk about that's non-spoilery that we wanted to bring up?
There was a dumb controversy surrounding this movie. Yeah, one of the reviews I watched on it brought it up. Okay. And it revolved around AI.
Oh, I heard about that, but I don't know anything about it. Explain.
Yeah, this is a dumb controversy.
The door that was on the stage of the fictional show, yep. As well as the images that they brought up on screen coming back from commercial, yep. Were generated by AI.
Okay. Is that a problem?
And a lot of people were really upset about that because they're taking jobs away from artists and so on and so forth.
You know what's funny? This is hilarious because Paul Schrader, who everybody knows, I love this guy. He directed that film about the guy from Hogan's Heroes, Autofocus. And I watched a commentary on that with him back when the film first came out, you know, came on disc eventually, and I bought the disc and I watched it. And there were scenes when he would do cuts, and, you know, they would show the outside of the bar that our lead character, played by Kinnear, was in. And then he would say, yeah, is that whole scene there that you just saw, that 5 seconds of the bar and that car that just rolled by, that's all computer generated. So stuff has been done for years. And
here's the thing, though.
No, it's not.
If I could just finish up first before we start discussing.
I thought you were done.
He wasn't done.
No. So a lot of people were upset about this, and some people were calling for a boycott of this movie because of it. But here's the thing. I actually watched an interview with David Dust Melchion where they asked him about this. And he was like, look. He's like, I think it's a conversation worth having. He's like, I can tell you that it was all done long before the strike and long before that became an issue that was presented in front of the public. And so it wasn't as volatile at the time when we did it as it is now. And he's like, I can also tell you that while the base art was done by AI, we did have actual artists on the staff that touched it up and modified it and made it look a little better. So it's not like there weren't any humans involved. So he's like, you know, so I think the whole thing is pretty silly. And whenever people call for a boycott of something, with rare exceptions, like, you know, the one thing I can think of off the top of my head that I might be behind is what's his fuck, the director from Jeepers Creepers. That I'll call out an exception there. Yeah, boycott that dude. but for the most part, you know, when people are like, oh, you should boycott Tom Cruise, don't go see his movies because he's a Scientologist. And it's like, well, you know what? When you boycott one of his movies, you're also boycotting the other 300 people that worked on that movie very, very hard. So is it really fair?
And some of this is about technology, right? I mean, we should get rid of
a lot of it is about people in the entertainment industry right now are terrified that AI is going to be trained to take their jobs. And
take some jobs.
Artists and actors
and programmers
and digital and editors, I imagine all of them are fucking terrified because they know these writers. Hollywood studios will not blink an eye in doing it if it means saving money.
Every
so
company is
that's where
that.
The whole thing is.
Yeah, well, every company's going to do that.
Because the idea is not the difference is it's not computer generated because when we say computer CGI, it's really a guy at a keyboard manipulating the image and creating the image and programming the image in, as opposed to the AI where it's the AI creating the image, and that's what scares the hell out of them. And that's why you go on, you say there's an AI thing, and you type in, you know, draw me a picture of David Demalshian riding a horse, and you'll see a horse with five legs. Demalshian will have like six fingers on one hand and four fingers on another, because the AI just hasn't learned well enough yet. Mm-hmm. And the argument is that the AI one, it's stealing jobs from people. And then two, that really what the AI does is just scours the internet for similar images fitting the parameters that you fed into it and steals from those images. Now, I would argue that's kind of how artists learn how to do art, and that doesn't, you know, that kind of happens. And you should be scared that the AI might be learning the same way human beings do.
Well, and that's honestly what they are afraid of.
Yeah. But it is the job thing. But look, I can tell you, like, we just had the sharing the faculty room with the English teachers. They just like had their big reports due, and like they're all sitting there with they run it through the AI checker, and it highlights how much of the report was written by AI. And you have a bunch of kids.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know they had that technology. That's kind of cool.
Oh yeah, right. they're turning in reports that are like 97% AI.
Oh my god.
Now back to the movie. I don't mean to. I apologize for interrupting you, but finish the thought, Mike.
But from what I read, because I read up on this too, there are three images in here, three, and these were inserted after the South by Southwest screening, so these were late additions to the program. And like I said, I get having the problem with it, but I'm not boycotting an entire film that has.
Why do you have a problem with it, Mike? Why do you have a problem? Why do you have a problem with it? Oh, I thought you said I could. I thought you said.
I said I understand why people have a problem with it.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I'm not boycotting. And you look at the set design. You look at the costumes. There is a shit ton of work done by actual artists here that were employed. They didn't. I would understand if they said, "Well, we're doing the entire movie with CG, with doing AI."
And
AI.
It's like you know, Snow White was done by, you know, cells, and then now every Disney film and every cartoon film now is done with computers. So, like when my kids watch the films and they know the difference and they're more familiar with, you know, Elsa and Anna rather than the old way, and so they think the old way is not as good as the new way because they're used to the new way, and so
it's the who.
What do you mean?
Is that the new way that you're talking about is still human beings creating the art, but the computer is just a tool. That's very different than having the computer do the art itself.
Oh, okay. I guess that's fair. I mean, they're using a software program that was created. You know, a lot of video games use the Unreal software that id Software, I think, made.
That's not the same thing.
Well, that's not all right. Well, I
in a way, it's the same thing. I think it's kind of the same thing. I see what Phil's saying.
Yeah. I mean,
it's taking away the job of people that used to design those types of interfaces for a game.
Right. Exactly.
Now they can just use one that's already created.
Exactly. So it's somewhat the same. I mean, it's an analogy is what I'm trying to say. And then, like I said, the 2002 film by Autofocus by Schrader, he had used it at points. And again, it's someone created that image. But again, we're talking about a film that's so low budget. I mean, there was an author that went to the con that you went to, Mike, that me and you know, are friendly with. And he wrote on Facebook how he was devastated that he saw so many computer AI covers of books. And, you know, especially when you come to that publishing level or this film level where it's as indie as you can be and you're putting money out and you're not going to make money. You know, this film probably made money because they were able to sell the film to Sony. But if Sony didn't buy this film, they put all this money in and then they lose it. They're never going to see it again. So I don't see an issue with them deciding to use AI.
In this particular case, I don't really have an issue with it.
I mean, didn't they use AI for the climax scene that happened with the girl?
No, again, so.
There's a massive difference between AI. There's a massive difference between AI and CG.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. I don't know. I don't see an issue with it. And if AI can save indie filmmakers money, similar to why you have Quentin Tarantino and people complaining about all the people who make films digitally.
Talk about the tools as opposed to who the creator is. And the AI is the creator. That's what they have a problem with. That's how the AI takes the job, because you're not taking one human being doing one set of tools, replacing a different human being using a different set of tools. It's you're taking a human being with using
And replacing him
completely with a computer.
But you're just putting in a door in the background or whatever.
Oh, I understand that. And, like, for example, the people – so there are always assumptions that certain people – and we're really getting off on a tangent here – that certain jobs are kind of safe, right? That you need human creativity. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to write a good story or good script, you still probably need a human to do it. AI is not there yet, and I want to emphasize yet. But where the AI is going to hurt people is, like, the guy who writes – like, when you're reading so you're going through Shudder, and there's a little blurb there that tells you about the wiki – about Late Night with the Devil on the blurb as you're scrolling through the different films. A human being writes those. In about a year, an AI will be writing that and replacing that human being. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about people who are writing – somebody who writes press releases, like basic press releases. Charmin is 50% off this week. AI will be writing those things that take zero creativity to them whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Or near zero creativity.
No, we get the analogy. So the point, which I'm very interested in your point.
So my point is that but they're afraid that the more the Gates use, all these little jobs that people have are going to disappear,
right,
and be taken over by the AI. Jobs that at one point nobody had a problem. Kind of. I won't say nobody. A lot of people were perfectly fine when the Roomba was taking over the job of the people pushing a vacuum. But
right,
now
higher
up jobs are white collar and creative jobs that people are going to lose. They're nervous about it and they're worried about it.
Right, but and I understand their worries. But
I don't think this is the way to take it out.
Unfortunately, we saw that with textile stuff, where I live in textile the area of the country back in the day, and all those jobs were lost. And they went down to the Carolinas because it was cheaper. And then the Carolinas lost them all, and they went to Brazil and China and Mexico and all these other places. And IT jobs, as Eric knows and Barrett knows, go to India or the Philippines or Israel or Canada or Mexico now. So
people have always had problems with that. But at least the argument would be that at least those were still going to human beings.
Okay, I really think we need to move on now. I will just sum this up by saying that I don't think that everybody who is protesting against this thinks that these three images are a big deal, but it's the beginning of something changing in this direction, and that's what they're against.
Agreed.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so let's move on to something else. Any other non-spoilery stuff that we want to talk about?
I liked the girl in this movie. I thought she was.
Yes.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Totally. She came out looking all nice and innocent. Even you can
hear. Still creepy.
Oh yeah, but I mean, when she first comes out, through the door, you hear the audience, oh. But then she sits down and she looks at the camera. And
yeah, the way that she was mugging the camera was creeping me out seriously.
Oh yeah, and it was fantastic. and even just, hi, we're here. We're glad to hear. We're here too. It's like, what do you mean we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She played her role really well.
Oh, she was fantastic.
Right. And I'm trying to find out. There's no IMDb or anything on her because she's fairly known. Well, I'm fairly new.
She's 18, if that's what you're wondering.
Yes, that's what I wanted. Okay.
Yeah, I looked it up before we started.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was trying to speak at because they were trying – because, you know, unlike a lot of young actresses or actors, she seemed like –
I mean, you could tell she was older than she was supposed to be in the movie, but
yeah, yeah. But that's not what I meant.
She was so good, I didn't have a problem with it.
That's not what I meant. Yeah. I meant that she was way more professional and good than you would expect for someone that was a younger actor or actress.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though you're right,
she feeling we'll be seeing her again.
As long as it's filmed in Australia, probably. But yeah, you're right. Well, you never know. I mean, a lot of these horror films, we said we're going to see them again, and we know it too. So
not all our actors here are Australian and British, though.
Yeah, except for
a lot of them are. They're so good at doing an American accent. Sometimes you can't remember.
Except for the lead, Des Malchian. He's the only American.
Well, I mean, you're talking about British actors doing American roles. You're talking about British actors doing American roles. I mean, you think about The Walking Dead, and you had two of the main big main characters in that movie, in that show. Sorry, are British.
Well, Kevin, I just posted in our Fallout about our lead actress.
I was about to say that she.
Oh, go ahead.
She's. I remember seeing her in another movie, and I forgot she was British in that one. But then, like Liam Neeson, there's an actor who can do an American accent, I mean, brilliantly. And, I mean, he's Irish, but I very rarely actually hear him do anything in his Irish accent. And, what was it? I mean, there's a couple others where, you know, they're in an American movie, they have an American accent. And then, what was it? The Stranger Things. You know, a couple of the actors in that were British. Like Eleven's British. The guy that played the really like mean nasty older brother, he was British. The guy that played the older brother, he's British.
I have to remind myself that Nicole Kidman is Australian.
I know.
I digress. I'm sorry, but it's just amazing on how. You very rarely get Americans doing a good, convincing English accent. I mean, one of them is Carrie Hughes with, Princess Bride and Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And actually, Robert Downey Jr. did a very good Sherlock Holmes. He actually had a language coach. He had a language coach helping him through those movies.
Well, you forgot Kevin Costner in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he did.
well, a lot of them, to be honest. I mean,
he was amazing. He just turned it on and off in the middle of the movie.
There's so many great British actors anyway. You don't really need to have an American pretend they're British. So, you know, I mean, you can say that the other way around, too. But everybody tries to get into the Hollywood films anyway. So it's understanding why – people from other countries make sure they learn American accents well.
If they're an American movie, I mean, if they're British but they do an American movie, they probably would get more work, you know, more distribution. And that might be why. I don't know. But all I can think of.
Oh, it's absolutely why.
I mean, you mentioned Robin Hood, and all I can think of is Robin Hood in Tights, where Carrie Hughes says in his British accent, even though he's American, unlike other Robin Hoods, I speak with an English accent.
All right. So we've been talking about.
Everything but the film.
Yeah. So let's drop the spoiler alert and start talking about the film. You want to do that?
Sure. Sure.
All right, let's do that. So we're 1 hour in to the podcast exactly. And so let's talk about anything and everything. So what do we want to talk about? I guess we can wrap it up.
I was just waiting for somebody else to go.
Liked how they did the psychic first and then the skeptic. That really brought out the 70s feel to me a lot.
Oh yeah. Well, they also brought out they make a couple references to The Exorcist, which, I mean, at the time it was, I can't remember when The Exorcist was released, but it was around that time, so it was definitely fresh on people's minds when this show was supposed to be when the show supposedly happens was the setting of the show.
Right, Exorcist was 73.
Right, and so this was 77, so I'm sure it wasn't played just once and then that was it. I'm sure they re-released it a couple times, you know, just because it was a popular movie and, you know, VHS wasn't around yet.
Yeah, that's back in the day when movies would get multiple releases. They would take time. They wouldn't get all rolled out in the theater at once. I think Jaws is one of the first films to kind of pioneer that, that you would like open in like New York and then you'd make your way to Pennsylvania, you know, after a few weeks or months. So people would be eagerly awaiting for that film that they've heard so much about to finally arrive in their town.
Well, I mean, not only that, but I remember like growing up, they would play Disney movies that were made, you know, in the 60s and early 70s, and they were playing them in the later 70s and early 80s. I mean, they just re-released it, you know, because, you know, kids and people just wanted to go see it. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, VHS and all that wasn't around yet, so there was no home video.
Right, and even back then, parents wanted an excuse to get their kids to shut the hell up for a couple hours.
I think they still do. I mean, can't blame them. I know how much I talk, and I'm sure my parents were ready to put me to a movie just to shut me up.
No, but one of the things I liked is that the psychic that the show begins with, like, he starts out and you're like, okay, this guy's a total scam artist. And then he kind of hits with the two women. But then later you hear the skeptic, like, talking to those women and find out that they took a survey beforehand and were answering some questions in the lobby. So maybe that was also part of his whole scam. But then he hits on something real by accident. People don't figure it out until he dies on the way to the hospital.
Yeah, you want to talk about projectile vomiting. Oh my goodness.
That was unexpected.
Yeah.
CGI. Which it was.
So he's doing by the way, it was not uncommon to have psychics and other things like that on these shows. Probably the most famous of which was Kreskin, who I think is the guy who bent spoons. Mm-hmm. But he's doing cold reading. And on his second watch, right, so he says he's looking for an Edward. Or was it an Edward? Who was it?
Peter.
When he hits with the women.
Peterman?
No, when he hits with the women.
Oh, okay.
It's a different name. Edmund? It was Edward. Eddie. No, Eddie. Yes, Eddie. No, his name was Edmund. Yes, Edmund. You know, he switches. And he died quite recently. It was 5 years ago. But it feels like yesterday. You know, and right. And so if you want, and that's how the cold readers work. Watch the South Park episode, John Edwards is a Giant Douchebag, which I want to point out is about the psychic John Edwards, not the former vice presidential candidate John Edwards, although also a douchebag. That kind of goes through the whole cold reading thing. And the other character, the second guest, I think is based on the amazing Randy, who had also been a magician and sort of dedicated his life to debunking these con artists or fake psychics, and had, I think it was $1 million offer on the table for decades to anyone who could prove the paranormal. And there was a really good documentary about him on Netflix maybe 5 years ago. One of the things that he was a closeted gay man. But like he points out that Like, you would get scientists testing these so-called psychics, and they would fool the scientists, he said, because the scientists weren't con men. He was a magician. He was a con man. He knew how they thought, so he could figure out what they were doing where the scientists weren't expecting it. Now, I think this guy, as portrayed here, was a bit more of a douchebag than what I remember the Amazing Randy being. James Randy was his name. But I could be misremembering that. But this guy definitely came across as a bit of a douche.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean he was...
That was the jacket given to me by Charles Lawton!
He was right in pretty much everything he said, but yeah, he was rude, and he... I don't know. You know what? Maybe he was rude and a douchebag because he just was playing a character that's pissed at all these frauds. And
yeah, he had no room for con men, right?
Yeah.
He just is like, fuck them. I'm going to debunk them and show how they're all frauds.
Right, right.
He's the D1, too.
Right, so he knows their shtick.
Yeah, I mean maybe he could have been more polite because he's the guest. And maybe, you know, they would have talked to him and said, yeah, you know, you're a guest and these are guests. So rip them to shreds, but be polite about it. But otherwise, I don't know if he was wrong to be that pissed because, like you just said, Barrett, he was a con man and he was upset with these people and enough's enough. So
well, if we were to pretend that this was a real human being and not a character in a film.
Yeah.
Part of what he's trying to do is educate and debunk and convince people not to waste money on these scam artists.
Right.
And I saw a show, an off-Broadway show 10 years ago that was produced by Teller from Penn & Teller, yep. Who produced and directed it. But it was a similar idea. And that it was talking about the BS of psychics. And not to be taken in of people exploiting you, like your grief and so forth for your money. Whether you agree with that or not, so be it. That's what the thing is. But you're not going to win people off by being You're not going to win people over by being insulting to them and belittling them and mocking them for believing in these things. And that's kind of what he's.
Well, the question is, Mike, is he's not going to win over the people he's belittling. The question is, is his public relations to the audience going to turn them off as well?
And I think I was turned off. And I don't think he cares. To the man.
Yeah, but I don't think he cares. I think his goal is to show that they're frauds. And once he shows them as frauds, he's confident that then those people will back him. So he's taking that chance of being abrasive, or he is just abrasive.
Right, right. No, but you know what? When they replayed the film and he showed everything was hypnotism, I was like, there you go, I'm on his side now. I don't care if he's a dink. So I think Barrett's absolutely right, which is he's going way out there, but he knows, or at least quote unquote he knows, that he's going to win the argument and everybody's going to be on his side once he proves it. And that was a pretty damn good example of proof, which would have converted probably a lot of people, even though they may still think he's a dink.
Until everything else happens.
Didn't follow it up with the actual incident.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, I don't know if you know it. This is one of the things I picked up on the second time through. When he's doing the hypnosis thing, the girl, Lily, says that, why is he acting funny? And
yeah,
I realize, oh, okay, because she's not hypnotized.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
No, the danger he runs by that particular approach is that because he's so abrasive to begin with, people just might not follow him to the place where he gets to prove it.
Right, yep. That's true.
Or even if he doesn't prove it, people still won't want to really listen to him because he's
a jerk. People want to believe.
Well, people want to believe, and also they don't want to believe a jerk.
Right.
True.
Right. Yeah.
And I will actually see now, like, Phil, you mentioned Morton Downey Jr. earlier.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Morton Downey Jr. is one of the guys on the talk show for his, like, 15 minutes of fame. And what he was famous for was being obnoxious and in your face, and like he'd have on like Klansmen, and he'd have, but he would do it. He would be an obnoxious jackass, and he won people over, a certain type of people over. Let me rephrase that, because a lot of people were turned off by him. I liked him because I was like 16 and an idiot. But it's the kind of thing that would appeal to a 16-year-old boy.
And now you're much older.
And now I'm much older. But he was abrasive and from a populist viewpoint, where this guy is out there smoking his cigar with, again, his Charles Laughton jacket, and it's a condescending sort of thing, as opposed to I'm one of you regular guys, and I'm not going to put up with this horse shit kind of thing, you know. And I'm, you know, I'm better than you, and I know better than you, and you're just a horrible human being, and that's what I think would turn him off.
And I think he was more wanting to prove it. I was listening to him. It almost sounded like a matter of pride for him. Not that he was right and that he was doing a service, but that he was right and he was not wrong. And it was all about him rather than what he was. It was like more about him than the mission.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
If you could see me, I'm doing the pointing to you, you right there. That's it. That's dead on. I think you're right. I think do some pride. He's proud, and I think he's just prideful in that he's beating these fools.
Yes.
I think he takes more pride in showing his superiority.
Well, Mike, in real life, and I'm just speaking for myself. This is all crap. There is no such thing as any of this supernatural crapola. So he knows he's right. He just knows it. And though he's a narcissist and a jerk, he's right. They're never going to win his money, the $100,000 check or $500,000 check that he changes it to right on the show, because there is no such thing as possessions and all this other crap. No disregard to you, Kevin. I'm not. But well, my point is.
Wrong in the end, though.
Right, because this is a horror film. But if this was real life and he was on Stephen Colbert or whoever there is out there, he knows he's right, and he's never going to lose his money. Just like the examples that you used, Mike, where they offered $1 million.
Well, you know? The problem is the way he goes about it, because even if he knows he's right, being right is the only thing that matters to him. He's really not trying to do a service for mankind.
He's just showing himself.
He creates the situation. Some of you has
this trait that they're more concerned about being right than trying to be make things go smoothly, and that's not always the right thing to do.
Right, he creates the whole problem in the end. I think why everything happens is because of his skepticism.
I don't think you could blame him solely, stirs up the pot.
Actually, to be honest, the person that's at fault is the host.
Yes.
Because he kept on telling the woman she said she didn't want to do it.
I don't know if she would have come back as a demon if they hadn't done all that going back into the footage from before and all that. It just felt like that kind of helped cause all that.
Right, but again, all these people don't believe any of it except for the psychiatrist woman and maybe the guy that had the projectile vomit. But well, everybody else
thinks of it as supernatural. Even the psychiatrist, I'm not sure.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah.
Well, and one of the things I really enjoyed about this movie is that throughout the whole thing, from the intro blurb we get about the host, up through the end of the movie, there's this allusion to him spending time with this shabby cult, full of Hollywood elites.
Based on a real thing.
By the end of the movie, it becomes clear that he was involved with this group, and perhaps he took part in some ceremony in order to get success. But he did not understand what he was agreeing to. when he partook in that, and it cost him his wife, and ultimately his career at the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I was trying to compare this with Rosemary's Baby, because the husband in that, played by John Cassavetes, he does the same thing, where he basically gives his wife and her pregnancy to the devil worshippers so he can become a famous movie star.
But he absolutely, in that movie, understands what he's doing. I don't think that David Dastmalchian's character in this movie had a full understanding.
I agree.
Right, right. And also, yeah. No hate mail for a 58-year-old movie that I just kind of spoiled. Okay, I guess you're right. I guess maybe he didn't know that his wife would get cancer and all this other stuff would happen to him.
No, and I think part of the wonderful part of David Dastmalchian's performance in this movie is that he doesn't say anything out loud, but by his facial expressions by the end of the movie, we understand that he now understands his complicity.
Right.
Yeah, and since this is a horror film and we know supernatural stuff may exist, which it does in this film, you know, if you play with the devil, you're basically selling your soul anyway. So
play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Yeah, so you can't really feel sorry for him by the end of the film, because he basically sold his soul in a sense to try to get fame, and of course it didn't happen. He got fame, but he never got to number one. But
well, also, this episode would have made him number one, but it ended with him, well, committing murder on film. So that's done.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd be interested in knowing that the filmmakers did base his character on the one from Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, there you go. Oh, how about that? That's pretty awesome. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
At least according to IMDb.
Yeah, I that's the first film that came right to me. It was his John Cassavetes' character from Rosemary's Baby. But Eric does have a fair point, which is maybe it was he only got half of it. While Rosemary's Baby, that guy knew exactly what was going to happen.
And I'll point out what this is based on, The Grove, is based on the Bohemian Grove. Everything in the film, just as he's kind of based off Johnny Carson and Dick Cavett and the rest, Michael Douglas, Phil Donahue, and you have the amazing Randy and Kreskin as inspirations, I think, for those two guests. The Grove is based on the Bohemian Grove. You have the reference to the what I'm sure is supposed to be the Church of Satan, or could be any one of a thousand cults that were popping up in California in the 70s and the 60s. So these are all things that are somewhat based on real life, but obviously heightened for the purpose of entertainment.
Yeah. Yep. And the Bohemian Grove thing is kind of interesting.
It is.
You know, it's similar to that thing that goes on in Switzerland every year, too, with Charles Schwab and stuff. So
I'm completely unaware of this. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah, yeah, I looked up some stuff, and I went into a rabbit hole on this. There's a guy that I saw this YouTube video of a guy that got onto their whole area, got to their shrine or something like that. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so you know, there's the Illuminati crapola stuff, whether it's true or not. There are some wealthy elites that are kind of weird in the head.
Heard of it, and they're part of that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
weird.
It's the kind of thing that it's like is perfect fodder for conspiracy theorists.
You could be right, but even if it's not conspiracy isn't ruling the world, it most certainly is possibly. Enough smoke and fire that it's a hedonistic prostitute type thing that's going on that's like ludicrous to the point of like, you know, what you would expect to think. At least that's what I feel. I think
it's basically it's like Scientology in that it's a bunch of insiders, you know, stroking each other's dicks and helping each other out. And if you're not part of the club, you're not gonna get the same benefits.
Right. Well, and in this movie, it struck me as like, yeah. I keep on referring to the actor by name. What is his character's name? I should start referring to
Delroy.
Jack Delroy in the movie, I think, was thinking of it strictly as a networking opportunity, right? And doesn't fully realize until the end of this movie that there was really some supernatural stuff going on.
I don't know. That's a really good question. How dumb is he of it? I don't mean dumb as in stupid. I mean dumb as in unaware.
Most of the people
I don't think he realizes until the end of the movie that he's responsible for his wife's death.
Yeah, okay. No, Mike, you were saying something?
Yeah, I don't believe like the Bohemian Grove, whatever ritual, it's from my understanding, it's kind of kitschy. It's corny. It's not some deeply serious thing. I don't think anyone's going into it really believing, you know, that there's anything to it. And I can see that here. Like you said, it's a networking opportunity. And that's probably how he saw this. And that's it, right? Make some friends and influence people and, you know, see if you can get a boost. And that's all there really is to it. And the idea that just as Church of Satan, you know, is the real Church of Satan was not about, you know, raising children to be possessed and sacrificed. It was about hedonism. It was about if you feels good, do it. That was pretty much the motto, right?
Love thyself.
Right. And that's right. That was the point of that. So, but just as like we had like Satanic Panic in the 80s, you know, and D&D was not about, you know, Satan worship. If they made a movie about it, it would be about Satan worship because it would make a much more interesting film.
Right. Right. All right, so where do we want to go now? What do we got?
Well, there are little things I do like. Again, I mentioned I really like the performance of the sidekick character because he's got his own little story arc going in the background. Because he's a guy who's clearly a little bit more naive or innocent-minded. He probably has never visited the Grove. And he gets progressively less comfortable with things as they progress. And it's ironic that he's the one dressed up as the devil to start, right? He's dressed up in the devil costume. And he's being, and I'm never sure how much of it he's aware of and how much he's just playing up, that he's kind of being mocked and belittled throughout the entire show.
You mean the Ed McMahon character?
The Ed McMahon character, the sidekick character.
Right.
And so we often see him like get a hurt look on his face. And again, I don't know if that's part of the bit, right? The stage banter between the two characters, meaning the two characters in the TV show, as opposed to that's how they, you know, that's the actual relationship between the two men. I'd be curious if that's the kind of thing
From their interactions that weren't on camera, at least in the movie, this whole thing gets very confusing to talk about. When they're not live on the air is what I'm saying. To me, their interactions indicate that Jack Delroy consistently disrespects his sidekick, and his sidekick's getting a little sick of it.
But, you know, I saw that too, Eric, but I thought it was more because the sidekick was becoming superstitious and said bad luck, you know, someone died and all
that stuff. Was also a factor. He was not happy about being there at that particular moment.
Right. So I think it was more that than anything else, than him being treated like shit. But then Mike's point too is on screen he seemed like he was depressed or whatever. But again, I think it was because of the whole situation.
Well, but I mean, he seemed to be like during the like commercial breaks, he seemed to be getting frustrated. But at the same time, it was almost like, well, I'm used to it. You know, I'm used to getting disrespected. But at the same time, you think about someone in his position, what else can you do? This is your job. You know, you're getting disrespected. You're the Ed McMahon. I mean, Ed McMahon obviously went off and did a couple other things on his own, but I mean, he's mostly known for his, you know, spot on Johnny Carson. You got to ask yourself, what is he, if he just says, that's it, I quit, what else is he going to do?
Yeah, Ed McMahon was huge because he had his own, you know, show that he did. This guy was more like the Letterman sidekick.
But I mean, the whole point, my whole point is with this guy, he wasn't Ed McMahon.
Right.
This is his gig. This is how he makes his money.
Right.
He's got to swallow the shit.
Right.
He's more Andy Richter.
Yeah, there you go, Mike.
He also noticed that Jack was changing in his desperation, and so he was concerned about that, and that was making him more reticent to go along with whatever Jack was doing.
Right. Well, plus Leo Fisk, the producer, kept on ripping into Gus as well.
He had no respect for the guy.
Right. Well, the thing is,
that producer guy, when he first came on stream, Dan thought he was Danny Masterson. I was like,
kind of look like that. I didn't even think of that. That's hilarious.
Who's Danny Masterson?
He's in jail now.
That 70s show guy.
He's
a Scientologist, right?
I don't know that about him if he is.
He may have been, but I'm sure he's a Scientologist.
I mean, the thing is, I can identify with Gus though when he's like, when he's saying, I think we really should stop this, or I think we really do something else, because he realizes, you know, maybe, you know, the skeptic is definitely, you know, not believing any of this, but he's seeing enough to realize, okay, something's going on, and I don't think we should be, continuing on with this. And I mean, and even the skeptic guy, one of the things that he said, like near the end of the movie, was he wanted in on the Bohemian Grove, because he was talking about, you know, I heard you have orgies. I really like to be part of the orgy.
Right.
You know, it's just. And the thing is, I mean, at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, you know, even if you had a chance, being nicer to a little kinder to everybody probably would help you in your chances of getting welcomed in there instead of being a total jerk to everybody.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
But it is the 70s, and everybody in the 70s was just wanting for an orgy. So.
In the 70s, every time period. What are you talking about?
Yeah. But the 70s were especially known for their hedonism.
60s.
And now it's also, again, a plot, and I appreciate that they don't necessarily like come right out and give you a bunch of exposition. I'm not saying they hide it well or trying to hide it, but that Jack is kind of in on a lot of this stuff. He's all this stuff he's kind of expecting to happen over the course of the show. Like he, and the fact that he's basically boning June, that he's been fooling around with her before the show. That they clearly go into this knowing they're going to be doing the exorcism thing, because they have, like, there's a scene earlier where they talk about, where Gus comes out and says, there's this knife and a thing, and I'm not happy about this stuff. And then they bring that stuff out later for the ceremony where, like, and so it's all, and, you know, they know where it's going. He's more or less pretending that he doesn't know what's going to happen.
Well, you know, but June tries to back out of it, and he kind of, along with the skeptic, manipulates her into going ahead with it while they're on the air.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's that they're doing it for different reasons. He's doing it for Jack is doing it for show. The skeptic is doing it because he's just saying, all right, you know, prove it. Prove this is right, you know. And so it gives him a chance to prove everything is wrong. But one thing I thought was interesting is that when the first time this demon manifests itself, the girl's eyes color changed. And I actually, I remember that's one of the things I was talking to Phil about this. When you watch this for the first time, watch her eyes. Do they change color? Mm-hmm. And Phil acknowledged that, yeah, they do. And then she also started getting all of these open wounds on her face.
Right, right. Oh, that,
mm-hmm. Where'd those come from? Yeah, but I thought that was really good.
Right, but you know, something like that is huge to say. How can she just change like that? The wounds, you know, the eyes, maybe, you know, she put in contacts when we weren't paying attention, but the wounds, you can't change that. But our skeptic, if there was no such thing as supernatural, proved that he hypnotized everybody and he was trying to claim that they had done the same thing, which,
right,
of course, hadn't been the case. But yeah, the change was pretty good. But I mean, this is a possession film, right? I mean, you know,
yep.
So it makes sense that we saw the typical staple type of things that you would see in a possession film of a girl that becomes possessed. And it was all done. It was good.
Yep. Well, and I totally understand what Mike is saying when he's calling out that at the end of the movie they broke the format. I totally understand. At the same time,
yeah,
I really enjoyed the fact that at the end of the movie he has those demon induced hallucinations that manipulated into murdering Lily. And that reveal when they just like it suddenly flashed at him sitting there and she has a knife in her chest. It's like, whoa. Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, let me ask you this.
I was wondering, I mean, when they put the dagger aside, my first thought was Chekhov's dagger.
Yeah, there you go. So was the hallucinations, were they supposed to be on film as well?
No.
That's a great question. I'm not entirely sure.
I'm not entirely sure either. I don't think so either.
Right. And so that's where I think – Well, I have the problem, and I think that's where you were referring to too, Mike, right?
Right, because when it starts out, the sainted Michael Ironside in his voiceover, you know, is giving us the background, and it's not just like your typical, let's say, at the beginning of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where John Larroquette gives us the little voiceover. This is what we're presenting to you. Is the master tape, recently discovered master tape of that episode, along with previously unseen behind the scenes footage. So that's giving you the idea that this is more or less a found footage film.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not, you know, overtly Blair Witch in style.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the final act. Now, if you're engrossed enough, you don't necessarily think about these things. But as all hell is breaking out on the set, those cameramen deserve a raise because they stay there. God bless the cameramen. You know, as the woman's head splits open, and you know it's so there's and but that's kind of the thing. Like, okay, if you're in the moment, you're not necessarily noticing, but then you get the final hallucination or whatever with Jack.
And there's tracking and shots, and yeah.
And I'm like, and it's like, okay, we have left the format. We've left this is a documentary using the footage from that night. And now we're showing what's going on, presumably in his head. There's no camera around. There's no pretense of a camera being around. We shouldn't have been seeing that.
Maybe the demon was operating the camera.
Maybe the demon was filming it. I would have preferred something, and I didn't. And I'm also going to say I didn't find it especially effective personally. If it was more effective, I might have been more willing to forgive it. But for something that I didn't think was worth it, I don't think they should have broken format. I wish they had found a way to have the ending on camera, even if they had an ending that left it more ambiguous. you know, sort of like, you know, infamously Blair Witch, right, ends with the guy in the corner and people walking out going, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And I, admittedly, a lot, leaving a lot of people unsatisfied.
I liked it.
Everyone except the filmmakers that who made fort.
Yeah.
But I, that's, I enjoyed so much of it. And again, now I've done a rewatch and that's often the test. And I was just as engrossed, especially in Dalmatian performance. That I'm willing to forgive that. Although I also think it's fair to say for most people, if you're going to fuck up 10 minutes of a movie, and I'm not saying this is a complete fuck up, but if you're going to screw up 10 minutes, the worst 10 minutes to screw up are the last 10 minutes. It's better to start bad and end strong than start strong and end bad.
I'll agree with that general statement. However, I didn't have negative feelings about
right.
what they did.
I think it's a general thing. For me, that's the sin of this film, for lack of a better term. And again, it's a minor one. I think the rest of the film, it's a 90-minute or so film. I would say I thoroughly enjoyed like 80 of the 95 minutes, and the remaining 10 I didn't not enjoy. I just didn't enjoy it nearly as much as I enjoyed the rest.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Mike. That was my exact same feelings. It just didn't fit with the rest of the film because the rest of the film was documentary or found footage, and this part, what was it? You know, I wish they had figured out a different way to do it. But again, like you said, Mike, it's a minor qualm because I still enjoyed the film.
Well, and there's also the fact that it was done a little clunkily. Like at one point, Dan thought the movie was over and started to get up.
Yes, I agree.
And then something happened, and he was like, "Oh," and he sat back down.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a bad thing. I can think of, like, Poltergeist. They go through the whole thing, and it seems like the movie's over, and it's not. We still have to go through the whole clown sequence and pool sequence and the whole, like, where things really hit the fan, right? They get Carrie Ann.
Yeah, the hallway sequence and everything, yeah.
Yeah, and it feels like the film is over. It's filmed like it's over. The music is the, okay, credit's going to roll any second now. And
you gave the gravestones, but you didn't move the bodies. Sorry.
Right. Exactly. And then the whole, and then everything
settle down, Bill.
For that last final sequence.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. It was one of those famous lines. I sometimes just scream out for no reason.
And it's a horror movie. A horror movie is never done until you actually see the words on the screen. And even then you can't be too sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What? There was a horror film from last year. I forget what it was. That it looked like it was over, and then I looked at my watch, and it was only an hour. And I go, "Oh, this is a fake." Yeah, and I brought it up in that episode that we talked about it, but I forget what movie it was. But yeah, that's how I know if a movie's not over or not. I mean, back when I was 11 or whatever I was when I saw it, Poltergeist at theaters, I could have been fooled because I didn't care about time like I would now, but yeah, yeah. But this one, we were already an hour and 30 minutes in or whatever it was.
Right.
So I can see how Dan got confused there.
No. It was time for the movie to be over, but it wasn't yet.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no after credits stuff, was there? Cause I shut it off after credits.
I don't think so.
No, I stayed through the credits, in the theater.
Yes.
I had a conversation with the woman who also was – oh, you know, I was there long enough to have a conversation with the woman who came in for the next showing.
Okay, good, yeah.
She showed up like 30 minutes early.
Because I was so pissed that I was watching it on a computer. I go, God damn, I ain't going to sit another 5 minutes watching on a damn computer. So I just showed up.
Oh, could have gone to the theater.
Well, I could have had an app that worked, and I could have just watched it on my big TV.
Could have gone to the theater.
Works anyway. On Roku.
Yeah, whatever. For some reason, that I have problems with Shudder. So, what about? Let's see. Who else? So we talked about the producer. We talked about. Well, I guess we didn't really talk too much about I mean, we brought him up, but we didn't really talk too much about Christo. Do we want to talk anything about him? He was the first,
yeah.
He died.
Christo, again, based on Kreskin, which I would suggest people look up, who is one of these guys. I would argue con men. Yep. Other people might not. Of the time period.
Yep. But because this is a horror film, right? He's not truly a con man, I guess. But anyway, continue.
Well, he is, because he is scamming. He is doing cold readings. They do the surveys. He's full of shit, and they've got like the plant in the audience that fucks around with him. He's joking about his wife. But then he experiences something real, and has a stroke or an aneurysm or something.
Yeah,
and dies, which is our first sign that something ominous is happening. And this is where Jack is not prepared for this, because he's basically channeling the spirit of his dead wife, who there are images of scattered throughout the film if you look carefully, besides the very obvious scene of her like holding him on the shoulder in what was one of the most worst effect shots I've seen in a long time. I do like there's this moment when we're in the show and you – I don't remember if we're in the show or – I think we're actually in the show and you hear the ambulance.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice touch, you know, that they're still having the real world go on behind the scenes.
Right. Yep.
While we're stuck in the middle of the episode itself. So, anyhow.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not sure what else there is involved in his story arc.
It ends because he dies.
It ends because he dies.
Yeah.
Well, you get the skeptic, you know, looking or talking to people and finding out that they were, you know, talked to his wife or whatever while they were waiting to get into the place. And the typical thing that you'd get for a non-real psychic.
Right. That's true. Yep. No, and it started out pretty good because it looked like the show was going to bomb because this guy was, like you said, Mike, he was a fraud. And you know, he goes 5 years. Oh, yeah, but it feels like yesterday, you know, all this other stuff. So it's like okay, this show, he's not going to be breaking Johnny Carson's records, that's for sure, tonight. But, again, then things start going haywire with the projectile vomit. And that's when, I guess, the first supernatural part of the film really comes out, I guess.
So. But even then, the skeptic points out that that's an old stage trick.
Right.
So he's
willing. Yeah.
Well, even with the lightning or something, the electricity that was going through the lights.
Right. Well, he's suggesting that it was done by the stage manager or whoever's responsible for the light and sound in the studio.
Well, even once they see the spirit on the film, when they review the film, and the guy's wife is in the scene, he still doesn't believe it. He's like, "Oh, wow, you doctored that even. You're awesome."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
He just refused to acknowledge. I mean, like I said earlier, it was kind of like about him. He wanted to be right more than, you know, his mission.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think you have to remember one of the most famous debunkers historically was Harry Houdini.
Yeah.
But he was a debunker not because he wanted to discredit people. He was a debunker because he wanted to believe.
Right. That's
and
true.
I think it was his mother who was supposed to he was supposed to contact him from beyond the grave, and he was always hoping if there was a way.
And actually, he said when he died, he would come back
if he could.
If he could, yeah.
But he wanted there to be proof of afterlife. But he, in order to know that, he had to investigate, and he didn't want to disprove people, but he wanted to know that they were real. And right. So he wasn't going to let himself be fooled. And so right. he was, you know, obviously the best in the world at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, probably ever, maybe. Yeah, that's true. Let's see. Where else did we want to go? Is there anything else that we missed that we haven't talked about that we would want to talk about? I'm glad they added the Grove, because that makes him a little less sympathetic of a character. And I thought that was good. And it also made it kind of, like, gross, because that those sort of things make me kind of, like, gross out. And so I'm glad they had that. And it made it more like, okay, there's a reason why we're getting these weird things happening, because he was a little shady himself. So I like that. Besides that, anything else that anybody wanted to bring up that we haven't?
I mean, I thought his heartbreak over losing his wife was completely genuine. And, you know, they say that episode where she came on the show when she was dying was his highest rated episode ever. And he doesn't realize until later that that was the fulfillment of whatever pact he made or ritual he performed in order to get himself fame.
Right.
It comes to that realization during the movie, and I think he portrays that through his facial expression only, and I think it's pretty amazing that he does.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it's making out his wife to being mad at him, but it's the devil doing that, not the
right.
Not what the reality is to affect him.
Right. I think his wife is just dead and gone, and it's all a fake thing by the devil.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that last after the station interruption. That's all a hallucination.
Right. Now, the ghost of her with her arm on his shoulder, do we think that is the devil or actually her spirit, or does it even matter?
I don't think it really matters.
Yeah,
but
that's my feeling.
I think the demon is probably impersonating his wife to get to him. When it possesses Kresnik or Christu, sorry. When it takes over Christu, I think that's the demon. I don't think that's his wife, even though it says his wife looking for him.
Right. Yeah. I would concur with that. Similar to Damie, what did you mean?
Exactly. Why you do this to me, Damien?
Why do you do this? Yeah, that was awesome. Now, what about the jerk again? And that was Carmichael Haig. When he was finally convinced that, oh my God, this is this devil or demon or whatever, was he praying to the devil?
Yeah, he was committing his life to it.
Yeah.
Why? Well, I didn't get that.
He was a skeptic until it became real.
but why would he give his life to the devil?
He didn't want
to
die.
He didn't want to die.
He wanted to live.
Right.
Right. Okay. So I would have just ran out of the building. He could have ran.
I don't think he can really run from the devil. Probably not a 60-year-old man.
You can run with the devil. I've heard a song about it.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Eric, I was going to sing that out, but I decided not to.
But thank you for not singing it. Well, you don't want me singing it either, trust me. But he presents the check. He's just, okay.
Well, that's right, he does. I forgot about that.
Yeah, because it disintegrates in his hand.
Yeah, it burns up.
He's going to give the devil the strength. That's awesome.
Yeah, but then also you can. There was the shout out to Exorcist, because when the I forgot the guy's name, the Ed McMahon guy, you know, brings up the cross from around his neck, and you know, the power of Christ compels you. It's like,
right, and then they twist his head. That was awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened to the priest in The Exorcist.
No, it was the movie director.
But at the end, the priest didn't.
No, he just had a heart attack.
Okay, no, the priest fell out the window.
Marin had a heart attack. Another guy jumped out the window. Right. Damien jumped out the window.
They make reference to the fact that the movie director did have his head turned around 180 degrees, but you never actually see it.
Exactly. It was the movie director that had his head twisted. Right.
But I also want to point out why they kind of foreshadowed that, because when he's going to do the hypnosis, and he says, "You're not. You don't. I don't want my head spinning."
Oh, Dracula does that to Renfield in the Frank Langella Dracula film. He twists his head. But anyway, continue, Mike.
Well, he does it in the book too, I think.
I forget.
It's a great. It's been book. A while.
So no. So for example, the he says, "I don't." When he's going to hypnotize Gus, he says, "I don't want. You're not going to make my head spin around."
Right.
When Jack is talking to
This movie was clearly aware of its inspirations.
Yeah, but Jack was talking to Christo. But I'm saying, but also then foreshadows the death. When Jack is talking to Christo about Carmichael, he says, "Don't worry, he's all wax and no wick." Again, and then he ends up burning up at the end. So there's some little foreshadowing of deaths in the dialogue earlier in the film.
Yeah, you're right. Renfield,
that's a good pickup, Mike.
Yeah, Renfield had his neck broken in the novel. I just looked it up by Dracula. Yeah, so that was a good pickup, Mike. Absolutely.
But I mean, it's interesting. It also reminds that whole the part where the power of Christ compels you. There is a scene in the Bible where these sons of a priest, they're trying to exorcise a guy, and they're saying, "In the name of Jesus," that Paul knows, and the demon looks at him and goes, "Jesus, I know. Paul, I know who he is. Who are you?" And the demon-possessed guy beats the crap out of him so badly that they all run away naked. It just reminded me of that scene. It just, the power of Christ compels you. Yeah, right.
No, I enjoyed how batshit that final scene went. Because after we see the girl get possessed, when that's all going down and her head splits open and there's just pure energy, I'm just sitting there watching going, "Holy shit, where is this going to go? This is crazy."
No, I mean, and the thing is, you were talking earlier about various talk show hosts, especially the daytime talk show hosts, where they were trying to, you know, garner viewers. Like, remember the big Geraldo one with the Klansmen? No, not the Klansmen. The neo Nazis with
one where he got his nose broken.
With the one where he got his nose broken.
Yeah.
When he did the same thing. Because you see a hippie fighting a Marine, but I mean, it's kind of the same idea where he was trying to get viewers by pulling that sort of thing. And I think Morton Downey Jr. tried the same thing too. Trying to get a fight on the stage, and it just, I mean, it got viewers, but it's just very quick.
Yeah, they kind of self-destructed those shows after a while because people. It was interesting at first.
If I remember correctly, I do believe I recently saw we passed the anniversary of Geraldo breaking open the secrets of Al Capone's vault.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Good grief. Yeah.
Most disappointing thing I've ever watched in my life.
Yeah, and which was the one about the Titanic safe?
It was the Andrea Doria.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that was him too, right? Geraldo as well?
Was it? Maybe.
I don't remember. I just remember the Al Capone.
Not paying vault. Attention to whatever Geraldo Rivera did after Al Capone's vault. I was just like, fuck you.
Well, I didn't understand, because I don't remember how old I was, but I was like, everyone's like, you got to watch this. I was like, why? And then, like, they opened it up, and then they opened it up. I was like, why did I have to watch this? There was nothing in it.
Because you had to see somebody get completely embarrassed by nothing being there.
Well, no, but people convinced themselves they were going to open it up, and it was going to be like,
it was a huge thing. Millions and millions of people watched that.
I know.
Yeah, because people believed that it was going to be like Indiana Jones going into the Well of Souls, and you were going to find the lost Ark of the Covenant sitting inside Al Capone's vault, and you know, or money, or dead hookers, or something. And
all right,
there was none of that. There was barely oxygen.
I'm pretty sure that now that we're talking about Geraldo Rivera, we're done with the movie.
I think you're
correct. Yeah. What was the name of that safe again? Eldora?
Al Capone's vault.
No.
The Andrea Doria. That was the one. That's the one I think.
That was the boat.
That flipped over.
Yeah. And I'm trying to figure out who the talk show host was that too, and that would, because that bombed as well. That's the one I remember. Because they open it up, but they're not allowed to take the stuff out for like an hour, and then they start taking it out, and it's like just this clump of crap, and it's like, okay, this is a complete waste of time. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't remember what show it was. Damn it. You know what? I can do.
I actually, to be honest, while I remembered Al Capone's vault, I completely forgotten about the Andrea Doria thing until now. Curse you for making me remember that.
Yes,
my father always had a thing. My father always had a thing for sunken ships, and so that was another thing I was kind of had to watch. And it was just, we found your papers.
Oh my God! I found out who it was. It wasn't even a talk show host. It was George Plimpton, who hosted a two-hour documentary in the opening, warning that visibility inside the safe would be murky initially. So it was just a special. It wasn't even one of those talk show hosts. But it was it bombed as much as the safe. That's for sure. Yeah. Sorry to remind you about that, Mike. I apologize.
Yeah.
Anyway. Bastards. All right. Well, I guess that's it. Eric made a good point. If we're talking about Geraldo, we're probably done. We've been talking now for an hour and 57 minutes. So the only person we'll do for tonight, what you've been watching, because you mentioned it earlier, Kevin. What was the stuff that you wanted to bring up? Since you know you're only you're just a sometimes co-host of this show.
I have no idea what I was going to. I brought it all up. I mean,
okay. There was something that you said earlier, and you go, "Oh, I'll get to it later." But it is.
Yeah, it was the guy wanting to join the Bohemian Grove and have orgies, and the fact.
No, I don't mean that. There was something you watched. You know what we've been watching?
An orgy.
There was some TV show or movie you said. Oh, about it.
No, it was Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
What's that? Explain it. That's what it was. Yeah.
Okay. It's a movie based on real life events. It's kind of a special force, like the original special forces for the Allies during World War II, and they pretty much grab a group of misfits and send them on a unofficial mission to, you know, thwart Nazi U-boat action in the Atlantic, and it was done really, really well. It was done by the people who did like Pirates of the Caribbean and the Sherlock Holmes movies, and a few other The Gentleman and Man from U.N.C.L.E. It's just a lot of good adventure. It has Henry Cavill,
Guy Ritchie
has Henry Cavill in it, Alan Richards, Richard Stepp. I can't remember how to say his name. Richardson.
Richardson, I think it is.
Richardson, yeah. The guy that plays Reacher, and Cary Hughes from Princess Bride, and among a few others in the first Saw movie. But it's interesting because historically speaking, they had a few people on that part of that. And one of them, I think, as far as I can, from the data, from the websites that I've read, Sir Christopher Lee was one of them. He's not in the movie, yeah. But he's a group later. And that's kind of where the whole thing with him and, with the Lord of the Rings movie where the guy says, okay, you know, this imagine stabbing a guy in the back. And he says, I don't have to imagine, I've done it enough times. And that kind of freaked him out. So yeah, it was a great movie. And like I said, I am really looking, I'm going to get the Blu-ray.
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah. Guy Ritchie, when he wants to make a great film, he can do it. All right. So, before we get into our final, opinions, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you get podcasts.
And Kevin, what's the name of that TV show podcast that we're doing right now? And what's it about?
Let's see if I can get the name right. Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola. It is our coverage of the Amazon TV show Fallout based off of the series of video games of the same name. And so far it is a fun show and we are having a fun time talking about it.
Indeed. And Barrett, what's that podcast that me and you do? And we have some other co-hosts join us every so often, and we're going to be doing an Emily Blunt film shortly.
That is the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, and yes, we will be doing The Fall Guy next.
That looks like a fun movie.
Yeah, let's. If you want to see it, you can join us. We, like we said, we bring in other co-hosts, so please join us.
Might take you up on.
We're probably going to be doing it in a couple of weeks because Barrett.
It has nothing to do with the fact that it stars Emily Blunt.
Not at all.
She does rule. She is the best.
I was ready to fight you, Phil, tonight for trying to. I had a feeling you were going to try and get us to do that for Dark Discussions. I was just going to be like, nope. Romantic comedy, fuck off.
I knew you were going to flip out, so I said, you know what? I'm going to bring it to Halloween Boutique instead, so I won't have to.
I'm having a tough time seeing how it goes into Halloween Boutique, to be perfectly honest with you.
We watch anything on there.
But yeah. Phil doesn't want to waste his pick for Cinema a la carte.
Plus,
we're never going to actually record that one again because Phil always does TV instead.
I don't want you to do new films that I haven't seen. It's like films that I want to talk about that I haven't seen.
You are doing a film that you haven't
seen. No. For Cinema a la carte.
Oh.
Speaking of that, Mike, what is that podcast that me, you, and Eric do that
once every couple of years?
Oh, let me think. See if I can remember. Cinema a la carte is the Dark Discussion spinoff that doesn't discuss Dark Discussions films, whatever those films are that are not objectively qualified. Basically, it started because some people were arguing whether or not the Mission Impossible films were appropriate for Dark Discussions material. And so in order to discuss the Mission Impossible films, we spun off a podcast series called Cinema a la carte for films that don't neatly fit under the Dark Discussions umbrella. So if you would like to hear a bunch of podcasts about all the Mission Impossible films, you'll have to look elsewhere because we've never actually covered any of them. We have covered, however, a bunch of other Tom Cruise films, such as Collateral and Risky Business and Reacher, along with other films like Inside Out. And
which has a sequel coming out this summer.
It has a sequel coming out this summer, just like Jack Reacher had a sequel. And Forbidden Planet and History of Violence. We've got a sports movie on deck. This is going to be the next thing that we recover, hopefully. Being a baseball film, we'll hopefully cover it right before football season. So that's the Cinema a la carte podcast where Phil, Eric, and I take turns picking a movie that is not a Mission Impossible film and is also not a Dark Discussions film to discuss in order for us to discuss Mission Impossible films.
Indeed. And I guess the last thing is, Barrett, what was the science fiction video game series that we just wrapped up about a month and a half ago?
Cortana's Communiques, detailing the Halo show, which had very little Master Chief in his outfit.
It was a strange. It was very strange. Yes.
Indeed.
Anyway, so that's some house cleaning. So let's get into our final reviews on this film here. Once again, Late Night with the Devil. And Eric, why don't you start?
Yeah, I love this movie. I understand Mike's comments about breaking the format at the end, but I don't care. I liked it anyway.
All right, sounds good. For me, yeah, I like this movie a lot too. And Mike is 100% right, but it still is a good film, even with that issue. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Again, the last 5 minutes, 10 minutes of the film, whatever it may be, didn't quite work for me. I'm perfectly willing to say that that is – I can see someone having no problem with that whatsoever. We recently covered a film whose name I can't remember that was also a Shudder exclusive, and we kind of called it out for breaking format, for it being a – putting us in the point of view of a character who didn't exist. And saying that was a bit of a cheat. But again, if you don't care about those things, that's fine. You know, you might enjoy the ending more than I did. But otherwise, like I said, I really do think Dalmatian gives a really solid performance. Actually, I think a lot of the performances here are really good. There is a cheesiness. There is a hamminess. But man, watch some old 70s stuff. That wasn't unusual. And just the set design, costuming, all of that really brings you back to that period, at least for me. So, yeah, I definitely recommend it. I've seen some people poo-poo it. I think some people weren't paying attention to some things that were going on because I think this is not a film that spells everything out for you. And I think Eric pointed that out really well. That he comes to realization, but he doesn't shout out to the audience, you know, that your wife died because of you. And this is the monkey paw. You wish for success. You got success by having your wife die. So yeah, I definitely recommend it. And I think that's all I have to say.
All right. Sounds good. And for anybody who's upset that Mike may have spoiled the monkey's paw, that story is over 150 years old. So
poo-poo. There is no dead wife in the monkey's paw. Spoiler warning.
That is true. It has something to do with a child. Either way. All right. And we got Kevin. What do you got?
This was a very, very good horror movie. I've been disappointed with a lot of horror movies recently, so this was definitely a breath of fresh air, and yeah. I really enjoyed it, and like I said, I will most likely see it again, and even with the ending, after hearing various opinions on this particular episode, I'm not as, I guess you would say, frustrated with it as I was going into it. I understand it a little better, and I am fine with it.
And Mr. Barrett?
Yeah, everything that everybody said pretty much is how I feel about it.
All right, nice and simple. So with that, we got the film once again, Late Night with the Devil, that came out at theaters on March 22nd. And it premiered at South by Southwest March 10th, 2023. That movie, by The Ranger, and Fassbender, whatever his name is, Fassbender. Yeah, what the heck was that film? Brooklyn 45, I think?
Yeah, Brooklyn 45.
Yeah, that.
And his name is Jeremy Holm.
Yes, The Ranger. But either way, those two films were two of the quote unquote highlights, I guess, at South by Southwest, supposedly that year, 2023. But either way, the film is written and directed by Colin Carnes and Cameron Carnes, starring David Dasmalchian, among others. And it is now on Shudder. If you subscribe to Shudder, you can see it there. And as Eric said, it still may be at some smaller theaters in the second runs theaters. So check it out. And with all that stated, Eric, what is this?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Let's talk about Late Night with the Devil. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.